Hey everyone, I want you to check out our sponsor, BustedTees.com. They sell really cool clothing and apparel, all of it inspired by your favorite shows, anime, sci-fi, video games, movies. That's BustedTees.com. And then at checkout, you want to use my name, Jason, 25945. That's all one word, Jason 25945. That's going to get you a discount, and it's going to help this show. That site again, BustedTees.com, like t-shirts, and that code again, Jason 25945. BustedTees.com, designs that pop culture.
Greetings from Tromaville. I'm Lloyd Kaufman, president of Troma Entertainment and creator of The Toxic Avenger. You know, folks, when we're not making those great Troma movies like Terra Firma or Romeo and Juliet, we like to kick back and listen to the Mixtape Podcast. Mixtape Podcast, because that's where I get all my information. I don't need the New York Times. Thank you, Mixtape Podcast. Uncle Lloydy loves you.
Gentlemen! Let's broaden our minds.
Who has a mixtape? Who needs a mixtape? Who makes a mixtape? Who needs a mixtape? You do, do. But you need to go.
Don't you wanna listen to our mixtape? Raise the roof and roll your feet. Come along. Don't you wanna listen to our mixtape? Sing along and clap to the beat. Settle in and listen to our mixtape. Another music vanishes. Enjoy your buttock sandwiches.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the mixtape. I'm Jason Emmett.
Yeah, I'm Casey Masterpiece.
I'm Twisted Kid Matt.
I'm Stu D.
I think Kevin forgot for a second. He just sat there. I'm Casey Masterpiece.
Hey, I'm not sure if there's like a delay or.
No, you sound. No, yeah, you're there's fine. No delay on our side.
Really? Right? Okay.
You're just weird. All right. You're just weird. I mean, I think there's a delay from your brain to your mouth. Maybe. that's what it is. Yeah. So we put it out there and we let you guys vote. We kind of pulled a list from the top 100 Billboard albums from 2023, and then we whittled that down a little bit. We got it down to about 15, and we put it out on our social media. And we had our listeners, the Tapeworms, vote. And we said, the one you pick is the one we're going to do a deep dive. And it was Thriller. You guys picked Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Thriller. What? I've never heard of this album.
Yeah, I bet.
No,
I've
never heard of it.
I heard it's awful.
I think I own it. Do you own this on vinyl now?
No. My mom used to back in the
day. I think I do currently. I think I bought it. I'd have to check my vinyl.
But. You know what? I think I do.
I feel like we saw it out, and I feel like we bought it when we saw it, so maybe. But we're going to do a deep dive into Thriller this week, and it's actually really intriguing. And I think as we talk about stuff, it's going to trigger a lot of memories in your guys' brain, because it did me just going over this, because I really wasn't thinking about the fact that we'll kind of get into it. But Michael Jackson basically said when he was creating Thriller, can we do an album where the whole album is a hit? This was like the thing they set out to do when they created Thriller, and they came real damn close. And so when I was going through and doing the notes, what I realized is out of 9 tracks, 7 of those tracks were singles and huge singles. So yeah. You guys are going to like know something about every freaking song on this thing. It's all going to trigger weird memories for you. It just like yanks you right back to the 80s, man. It's bizarre. Kind of what we've been doing a lot lately is I'm going to give some facts, but we're going to kind of stop and get everybody's personal thoughts on a lot of these facts, because like I said, I just suspect it's going to trigger a whole bunch. The year is 1982. I myself was but a wee lad, just a wee little lad.
You were 4.
I was
6.
I was 6, man. I was 6. But,
wee lad.
I was a little kid, man. I was tiny. Yeah. I vividly, at the age of 6, I still vividly remember this album. It was Michael Jackson's 6th solo album, his first being 1972's Got to Be There was his first. And then Ben was 1972. Do you guys remember Ben, the album he did about the rat.
Is that the rat one?
Yeah.
Then the two of us need such
for
no
a horror
more.
Movie, by the
yes,
way.
Very weird. Music and Me was 1973, Forever Michael 1975, and then Off the Wall was 1979. So this is the follow-up to Off the Wall, again 1982, produced of course by anyone?
Barry
Quincy Jones.
Quincy Jones. No. Michael Jackson has stated that he wanted to release an album where every track was a hit. They budgeted $750,000 for the album. This is 1982 money. And he intended to make it count nine tracks, seven singles. So we're going to kind of go over the tracks really quick. It's one of the things we're actually going to break this track list down. And again, you guys are going to be like, phew. So the first track on the album was Wanna Be Starting Something. This was the fourth consecutive top 10 from the album. It peaked at number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100. There's no music video for this song, though. Did you guys know that there's no music video for Wanna Be Starting Something? Which kind of shocked me.
When did it come out?
1982. But a lot of these other tracks have
well, that
music
was
videos.
Probably during the time that they weren't letting him on MTV.
So that's a topic that this album, we're definitely going to talk about because this album changed all of that.
Right.
And maybe you're right. It's very possible that that's the case. I don't know. Most of these singles did get music videos, but Wanna Be Starting Something did not. I want to clear up something really quick. He is not saying, gonna say one more time. No, he's actually saying, mama say. It's a real thing. It comes from another song, and it does, in fact, mean something.
Yep. Isn't this the one where it says, I'm a vegetable?
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is.
Connie
back in the day called in to
our old show,
your previous show, The Obscure 80s.
Laughing.
It wasn't?
It was The Obscure 80s.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Laughing her ass off.
Laughing her ass off, a little intoxicated. She was the passenger in the car, and the song came on the radio. She heard that lyric and just started dying laughing, and then decided to call you guys and leave a voicemail. And we really tried to find that audio.
If I knew what episode it was off of, but there's 100 episodes. Yeah, it was pretty funny. I remember her calling in just dying laughing, trying to read, I'm a vegetable.
They eat off you.
You're a vegetable.
Could it have been like the Prince versus Michael Jackson episode that we did?
No. She just randomly called us to leave this voicemail because she heard it on the radio. So the next track off this was one of only two tracks off the album that was not a single. And that is Baby Be Mine. So there's only two tracks off this entire album that were not released as singles. Baby Be Mine was one of them. So if there's a song off Thriller you don't know, it'll probably be one of these two. If you heard it, you still would probably be like, oh, I have heard that song. Of course you have, because most all of us either own Thriller or knew somebody that owned Thriller, and we've listened to the whole album. Mm-hmm. It's just happened. Next off of this was the first single released, which is the third track, which is The Girl Is Mine. He performed this one with Paul McCartney. It is the first credit appearance of another artist on any Michael Jackson album. So in any Michael Jackson album, solo album, there's no artist that was ever given a credit. This is the first time, and it was Paul McCartney. And we all know the story of this. What was the first song he and Paul McCartney did together?
Say.
Mm-hmm. And that was released before this, and that was on a Paul McCartney album. So the single peaked at number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 and number 8 on the UK chart. So, again, big hit. The next track on the album was, in fact, Thriller. This was the 7th single. So this was actually the last single released off the album. Right? Were you just doing the Thriller dance? Is that what you were doing?
Yeah.
So out of all the... This is...
Attempting it.
This track is really cool, right? What they did here, pure genius. So the album's doing well. It's staying in the top 200, Thriller is. And they're releasing all these singles, right? The album, they wait. They purposely wait until the album falls off the 200, and then they release Thriller as a single, which jettisons it back up. Its song reaches number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100, and then we have the epic music video, or let's just call it a mini movie. This thing is directed by John Landis, written by songwriter Ron Temperton, who had previously worked with Michael Jackson. It was originally titled Starlight. This video was called Starlight, not Thriller. And I'll tell you some of the lyrics of Starlight. Give me some starlight, starlight sun.
Give me some starlight, yeah. Starlight no. sun.
It right. doesn't go quite with Thriller. Have, yeah. yeah, it doesn't quite have the ring of the fucking.
It's just not,
it doesn't scare me.
It would be so different like if we heard that. So the production team were looking for a title track for the album, but they weren't feeling so Starlight.
Fucking good, too. So, this video is amazing.
Oh, this. And they also had rapper Vincent Price on here as well.
Rapper?
So
rapper.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, he raps.
The first white rapper.
He raps in the song. It's what he does.
It's literally called Vincent's Rap.
It's
in the credits.
So
Vincent's Rap.
They were looking for a title track, but they wanted something kind of mysterious, right? And they decide on Thriller. It's funny because you were talking about Vincent Price, the spoken word part at the ending. Quincy Jones's wife at the time, Peggy Lipton, was actually friends with Vincent Price, and she suggested him. They wrote his part in the cab on the way to the recording studio. So Vincent Price's all that ending thing was written on the cab on the way there. So that just was one of those sort of happenstances that the whole thing with Vincent Price even worked out. All right, so the next song on the track list is Beat It. This was actually released as the third single off the album. And this is what Michael Jackson had to say about Beat It. You know I'm going
to
do it.
You got to stretch to prepare for this one.
You got to stretch the vocal cords to get a high enough.
I wanted this is going to be a long one.
I wanted to write a song. The type of song that I would buy if I were to buy a rock song. And I wanted the children to really enjoy it. The school children as well as the college students. Listen, I
got a weird
do that as Michael's.
Yeah.
Michael's deep voice. Hey, man, I wanted to write a song, the type of song that I would buy if I wanted to buy a rock song. And I wanted the children to really enjoy it, the school children, as well as the college students. It's not nearly as creepy when you say it in the deep voice, right? Why is it creepy if you do it in the high Michael voice, but if you do it in the deep one, it's not creepy?
It sounds like you're gripping your nuts and squeezing them.
You make me giggle.
Shut up.
He actually said that once. I was watching. Now that's creepy. He said, shut up. You make me giggle. I actually saw him in an interview once where
Michael Clark Duncan.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Michael Jackson.
That'd be kind of cool. I would have paid for that.
Yeah, it would.
So Beat It peaked at number one on the Billboard Hot 100. Stayed there for 3 weeks. Was number one hit in Europe. And I know that we know the answer, but Stewie, who played guitar on Beat It?
Eddie Van Halen.
Edward, please. Edward Van Halen.
Uncredited.
He did not get credit. Yeah, he did not get credit on the track. Like
he just happened to be in the studio.
Paul McCartney is the only other credited musician up to this point, even on this album. But Eddie Van Halen, yeah, he plays guitar on Beat It, which is why it was such a huge hit. Beat It is probably one of Michael Jackson's biggest hits of all time. It was a massive success. Next up on the list is Billie Jean. This was the second single released off the album, reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100, topped the Billboard Hot Black Singles chart within 3 weeks, and became Michael Jackson's fastest rising number one single.
Sounds like a pop-up on a sketchy website.
ABC, The Love You Save, and I'll Be There in 1970, all of which he recorded with the Jackson 5. This was his highest rising single since those songs. So this is his highest rising single as a solo artist. It was also a number one hit in UK, Canada, France, Switzerland, and Belgium. So Billie Jean. So, well, I got a couple more tracks we'll talk about really quick. And then I want to ask you guys a couple questions regarding a few tracks off the album. Next up on the list is Human Nature, one of my all-time favorite Michael Jackson songs, actually. This was the fifth single from the album. Became a top 10 hit in the U.S., reaching number 7 on the Billboard Hot 100. Reached number 2 on the Billboard Adult Contemporary Chart. And it was certified platinum by the RIAA. Something interesting about this song was written by keyboardist Steve Porcaro, whose daughter told him a little boy at school hit her. And he said to her, he probably likes you, and it's just human nature. Do you guys know who Steve Porcaro is?
No.
He is the keyboardist for the band Toto.
Huh. We're not in Kansas anymore.
We are not. We are in Thriller Land.
Yep.
Toto were assisting.
We're in Never Never Land.
The whole damn it, I missed that. I missed that, and I'm mad at myself for doing it. That was a pun I should have grabbed.
Gotcha.
So I don't know if you guys know this, but Toto was actually assisting in the production of Thriller. So they were in studio and stuff when Thriller was being made, and he'd written this song for his daughter. Quincy Jones heard a demo version of the track. He liked it a lot, and he said, hey, we would love to put this on Thriller. So they brought the song to John Bettis, who's wrote a lot of stuff for Michael Jackson. He rewrote the verses, changed it to a passerby in New York telling the story, and we get Human Nature, which is often sampled song by Michael Jackson. People sampled the shit out of it. And like I said, one of my all-time favorite Michael Jackson songs. I don't know what it is about this song. I just really like. Next up on the track list is PYT, Pretty Young Thing. PYT was released as the sixth single, became the sixth chart topper, hitting number 10 in the U.S. and 11 in the U.K. He never performed PYT live.
Seriously?
Really?
It's never been performed live.
You know what's funny is it has been, but not by him.
Not by him. Yeah, Michael Jackson never.
Like, I remember live. Back in the day when they, was it the Jabberwockies dance group, did a number with that song on it, and it's pretty awesome. I'm kind of glad they came out with it. It was pretty hot.
We talked last week about Dylan and how many people had, like, done his... like remade his songs. I wonder how many people have sampled Michael Jackson songs.
Probably
to name the list. God.
John, yeah.
It's got to be.
More than MGs.
It's got to be a lot. It's got to be like a ton. Last track on this was The Lady in My Life. This is probably my least favorite song on the album, and it was never released as a single. Like I said, only two of nine tracks that were not. So, first of all, I'd say he succeeded for the most part. Every song that was released landed in the top 10. Every song he released off this album. And I don't know why they decided not to release those two. They were pretty smart about what they were doing, so I would assume
they're kind of not as good.
Yeah, they're not. But still, off this album, I bet they still would have charted. Maybe not as high, but I bet they would have charted. Yeah. This album was it was a juggernaut. You couldn't freaking stop this album.
Oh, it just
rolled through.
I mean, Thriller wasn't just an album. It was an event.
You're 100% correct. It was an event. We all, like I said, I remember this vividly at the age of six. How could you not remember Thriller? I remember the first person I knew who owned the album. It was my cousin's buddy. My cousin was a couple years older than me, and where we used to live, we were around them a lot.
You used to watch the music video like this.
So we'll get into the music video in a minute. And you're not wrong about that. It terrified the shit out of me. But I want to ask you guys a question. Out of all the tracks off this album, are there any you like that are your favorite? And are there any you guys just don't like? Let's start with Stewie. Do you have a favorite track off the album Thriller, first of all?
Well, Beat It is definitely because it has more of the rock sound to
it. It's much more rock for him.
Again, like I said earlier about the PYT, when the Jabberwockies did on the television show, kind of fit pretty good, and I kind of like the song even more now.
Is there any track off his album you're not really that big of a fan of?
I mean, I guess the two that weren't really released, because I don't know if I've ever heard them.
The Lady in My Life is not one of my favorite Michael Jackson songs. It's just, it doesn't really do a lot for me, but you know, I can put in the album of Thriller and let it play, and it doesn't really bother me. But I don't go listen to it on its own. Matt, what about you? Is there a track off this album you like really like a lot, or like, do you have a favorite track off? It's Thriller.
Yeah, it's Thriller. Thriller. Everybody knows with me.
It's with Vincent Price. Yeah, it's gonna be Thriller.
Yeah. For those who don't know, I'm a huge horror movie fan. I love
especially the classic stuff.
Rick Baker. Yeah.
But you really like the old classic cinema. Like, people like Vincent Price are kind of like...
Vincent Price is one of my favorite actors. Yeah. He's just fun in most of the things that you see him in. And just, I mean, like I said earlier, the funk of 40,000 years. Like, that line is just so weird that it just comes up out of nowhere in the song. And
I like that they make him say, y'all's neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah. To terrorize y'all's neighborhood.
To terrorize y'all's neighborhood. So good.
Yeah. But yeah, just, you know, Thriller is, of all the songs on this album, Thriller is probably my favorite. And Connie actually introduced me to a Steve Aoki remix that came out a while back. She loves that version, and I like it as well, but nothing's going to beat the classic version.
Yeah. And I mean, that happens a lot where it's, we've talked about doing an episode. We actually have done an episode where we, better than the original, where songs we considered remakes that we actually thought were a little bit better than the original, but usually it doesn't happen. But I like when you can respect both and appreciate it.
Yeah.
Like, this one's not bad just because it's not the original. Is there any track off this album you just don't like? Like anything that you were like, not really for me?
So leading up to this, I did the deep dive as well, listened to all the songs on there, and I don't think I had ever actually listened to Thriller in its entirety, knowing that it was the album.
Just because of those two songs, though.
Just because of those two songs, I had heard every single song on here. But yeah, Baby Be Mine and Lady of My Life just didn't do it for me at all.
You get why they,
I know exactly why they didn't put them on there, but I mean, God, just... It's literally just a list of amazing songs.
Right.
Billie Jean, just the opening, the intro to it, just the drum beat, just gets you going.
It's funny because when you put the whole album on, like you just said, and you start listening and it gets to Baby Be Mine for a second, you're like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. Like, you're so not.
Is this on shuffle? What
you're
is this?
You're so used to the rest of the tracks. When that one comes on, you're like, what is this? I don't know this.
Yeah.
Well, before I kick it over to Kev, for me, I told you Human Nature is a I fucking love Human Nature. What it is about that song I like so much. I've never been a huge fan of Billie Jean. I don't hate it, but I don't love it either. And I don't know what it is about Billie Jean.
Really?
Yeah, it's fine, but it's never been like one of those songs I gravitate towards when I'm listening to Michael Jackson stuff. I don't know why that is. There are some that are, when they did Michael Jackson's Ones, which is all his like number one hits, like I freaking love that album. And like Smooth Criminal and The Way You Make Me Feel, like I was a big fan of all that stuff. So, but Billie Jean was just not one that ever, I don't know, never really got me. Kev, what are your feelings on?
Actually, I'm kind of the opposite. I like Billie Jean the most. Actually, it's a toss up between Billie Jean and PYT. Those are like my two favorite from the album, but favorite from a list of different favorite Michael Jackson songs.
Sure.
That came from this entire album. It's beautiful.
And
Matt and Stu said, go ahead.
It's masterfully produced. I mean, Quincy Jones just like nailed this thing, man.
That was a dynamic duo there.
Yeah, it really was.
And
what were you saying?
After Bad, they kind of like went their separate ways.
Well, then they have some issues.
Lex,
or did he just part ways with him? Because like I never knew the story. Like if they had some problems or if they just parted ways, I never really knew.
There's like their working habits. I mean, Michael had felt like certain ways about certain songs, and you know, Quincy Jones felt another way. Like, for example, Quincy Jones wanted to introduce rap in Bad, but Michael thought rap was going to be a fad and it wouldn't last long.
Okay, well,
so that was a huge mistake on Michael's end.
And
is that why he started doing the rap in the black and white?
I was going to say, unfortunately for Michael, when he did add rap in black and white, I actually don't. I'm not a big fan of that rap portion. I love black and white, but that portion.
Macaulay Culkin did it?
He did. he is in the video.
But Quincy Jones could have made it work.
I think so. Like, I don't think Michael, when he finally jumped up, I don't know. That rap always felt a little out of place to me. I don't if I'm alone in that or.
No. Okay, so. Jumping way ahead to black and white, let's discuss this because I 100% agree with you on that. It's so out of place, even the music itself changes. It has that weird, like, thing.
Yeah,
it's like, this is a different song,
and it's like, it's what jarring. Is it? It's weird.
It. Yeah, then you got Michael Jackson in a hoodie.
But
looks weird anyway.
I always liked that song a lot. The radio edit that they would play didn't always have the rap in it for time's sake, and I always preferred that one, actually. Which is, when you try to listen on Spotify, you're going to get the rap, which is fine. I still love the song, but I prefer it without it on there. So, So I think we all agree, though, this is an overall fantastic album. Like, I think we all probably loved it and remember.
I think we'd be stupid to say it was a terrible album.
Yeah, I think anybody
this
would
is,
be.
This is one of those albums that I think people could consider it inarguably one of the best albums.
One of the best albums of all time. From beginning to end, there are a few out there. I would say that people would agree, like the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper is one of those where a lot of fans are going to say this is from beginning to end just some of their best work. Bad was a pretty major album for him too, though. It blew some doors off, but I don't think it came.
But it was bad.
I don't think it's that was bad. I love that Weird Al's version was called Even Worse.
Proud of yourself on that.
Weird Al had Even Worse. But Bad didn't come close to Thriller. It didn't. It had a lot of hits, but it just wasn't quite as big as Thriller. And I actually, is it still the number one selling album of all time? I think it might be.
I don't know. I don't think so anymore.
We'll edit that fact in
Here I do have some notes. Let's see what my notes say. Thriller was the best-selling album in the United States in 1983 and 1984, making it the first album to be the best-selling for 2 years straight. It's been a record 37 weeks at number one on the Billboard 200. It gained diamond certification in Argentina, Canada, Denmark, France, Mexico, and the UK. Thriller sells an estimated 130,000 copies in the U.S. per year. In 2017, this fact I have here, after streaming became kind of a thing, Thriller was certified 33 times platinum for a total of 33 million album equivalent units sold. It remains the best-selling album of all time, having sold over 70 million copies worldwide. So as of when I pulled these notes, it's still the best-selling album. Now, that could have changed, but I don't know what would have oversold it.
Doubtful.
They don't sell albums anymore, and that's the thing. Yeah. Singles are now a thing, and albums are not, so I don't know what would... And with streaming services, people don't even go on iTunes and buy albums anymore. They just stream stuff, so I don't know. So Stu kind of brought it up, and I said I really wanted to talk about it, but you cannot talk about the Thriller album without talking about the Thriller video. And I want to talk about this video before we discuss some of the places this album itself had an impact on. So the video for Thriller was conceived as a 14-minute short film written by Michael Jackson and John Landis. And the budget was very high. Like, this was unheard of for a music video. The record company actually said, no, it's too much. We're not going to finance this. And they thought, you know, Thriller had peaked. You guys have hit everything. I mean, you're not going to do any better with this album than you've already done. You got to remember, this is 1982 videos. Michael Jackson had a vision and he knew it was going to work, but the record company just didn't see it. So they came up with this idea, right? He came up with an idea of how to get the money and how to convince them this was going to work. And what they did was they created a making of documentary, making Michael Jackson's Thriller. That was what it was called. It was produced to receive financing from television networks. It hit MTV and it doubled the album sales. That documentary doubled the album sales by itself. Hell, they released the documentary, by the way, and that sold over a million copies. Just the documentary, not the album, the documentary about the making of the video. And that is what happened to a 6-year-old Jason Emmett. They had a display at Kmart. I will never forget this in my life. The first thing you guys know who aren't Gen Xers, one thing you need to understand is our parents would take us to stores and kind of walk away from us. This wasn't common.
Yeah.
And I lived in a
lonely ass generation once you think about it.
I also lived in a very small town at the time. There was not a lot of, it wasn't, you know. So they had a display of the documentary up at Kmart. For those of you who don't know, Kmart was a store. It used to be like Walmart. It was on VHS, yes. And Kmart was a store. Was probably both, man. This would have been about that time. Yeah. Kmart was a store kind of like today's Walmart, for those kids who don't know what a Kmart is, because they have been around
a
long time.
It was the Target of the day.
It had a blue light special.
Blue light specials, yes. I was going to say it too.
Oh, the blue light special. God, I forgot about that.
You saw that blue light. You knew something was on sale. So they had a display, and they were showing the making of documentary on a loop, and I walked in with my mom, and I started watching it. And I stood there watching a majority of it on that TV in Kmart, and it scared the living shit out of me. I was this terrified little kid watching Thriller on, and that's what Stu was saying. Like, oh my God. So do you guys remember, like, when you first saw Thriller as a kid, do you remember watching this video of Thriller as a kid?
Oh God.
Stu looks like he's doing the Batusi.
Nightmare inducing.
Were you doing the Batusi?
You looked like you were doing the Batusi from Batman.
Yeah.
No, 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 no. So, so you guys remember, like, do you remember this as a kid? So, Matt, you wouldn't have.
Oh, yes.
Been,
what, two or something?
When did it come out?
1982.
I was a year old.
He's like, that's why I am as fucked up as I am today.
It made me, honestly, I love horror now, but I think I wasn't really that into horror until I was about like 15. It's like I don't even remember what spawned that later on, but I'm pretty sure that the Thriller music video kind of scarred me for a while.
It probably had something to do with pumpkins.
Made me not want to watch
right?
it.
Did it have anything to do with pumpkins? Because you are a little obsessed with pumpkins.
I love pumpkins. Yeah.
I love pumpkins.
I got like 10 tattoos of pumpkins. So yeah,
probably. And to get off subject completely for like just 30 seconds, Matt came up with this brilliant thing. He liked it to get pumpkins autographed, and he figured out he could buy the foam pumpkins and carve them, and then they would last forever, and he'd take them and get them autographed at horror conventions, which is a really cool idea.
Yeah. I got Elvira on a white pumpkin, and I got
the kid who played Quinn Sam. Lord
that played Sam in Trick or Treat.
Trick or Treat. They're making a sequel
to that. Sign those.
So
right. I will watch it.
This, I think one of the things that really blew our minds was it looked good. Like the effects in this video. Mm-hmm.
It looked real.
Yes, they look great. And they have zombies. Yeah, zombies are dancing and it's working. Like, it's working. And Michael Jackson's makeup effects look good too. Like,
yeah, he looked like he was sunk in.
Except for one shot.
Well, he probably was a little bit. Yeah. But no, seriously. One shot.
There's literally one shot in the entire video that does not look good.
What's
and it is the last.
I love the
single
last
frame.
You mean where he turns around,
he's
and his
got
eyes
the contacts
are glowing?
In, and one of them's a little.
It's a little off. It's a little wonky, but it's still good.
And then
still
they zoom
very
in
effective.
On his eyes.
It's like, a very effective shot.
Take 2 seconds and redo it.
And this dance with the zombies has become like. I mean, people do this dance. You know, in public, it's become such a big thing. And
usually,
it's,
white people at wedding receptions.
It's hugely choreographed, like in the video. Like the choreography is wonderful. And like I said, you have full zombies, people in full zombie makeup doing the dance with them, and it works.
That little jump on the screen that just happened, there's a video where I think it might actually be in the making of where they jump and you can literally draw a line across the bottom of the screen and they're like at their feet and they are all in perfect unison.
Yeah,
doing that jump.
Knowing
like to get that many people to jump at the exact same time and land at the exact same time is near impossible. And they did it.
Knowing what I know about Michael Jackson, he probably had them rehearse. And I don't think he was mean about it. From what I gather, he was always treated his dancers really well, but they would rehearse and rehearse until they perfected stuff. It's just was kind of what
I think this might have been the video that he created that the dance troupe behind him type thing where they mimic the same moves as him.
I mean, that kind of stuff. It always. I mean, he was doing that stuff with the Jackson 5. If you think about it, they were all sort of.
Oh yeah.
And they kind of learned early on to put Michael out front, even with the Jackson 5, and they would like dance behind him and stuff. But maybe on that scale, because it became such a. There were so many dancers in that video with him. It became like a thing, and I think even Janet would do that kind of stuff later. You know, and so you kind of wonder how much of an influence he had even over his own sister. And like, cause at this point he's broken off from the Jackson 5. It's been 6 albums on his own. And at this point with Thriller, his dad's not managing. None of that's happening anymore. This is all him at this point. So
why did I think that Off the Wall was his first album after he left the Jackson
5? Because the others just,
that's what I thought.
The others weren't,
believe it or not,
as mainstream as I think what we were used to, and Off the Wall hit mainstream. And I think it's just one of those things. They were all a lot more like R&B stuff. And so you weren't hearing them in the pop world as much. And there was also probably a little disco influence on some of them. So,
yeah.
So I don't
is
know
if the album that Rock With You is on.
That's off that the wall. That's off the wall.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Off the that's wall. Disco.
I'm gonna rock with you all night. So I don't know if you guys remember
another
this.
Great album.
But when Thriller hit MTV, they were literally playing the thing twice an hour because people were calling in and demanding they play it twice. Like, and so they started playing Thriller twice an hour on MTV, like the 14-minute thing. Yeah.
They're like, I didn't have my 14-minute VCR ready. Started over.
Almost only a half hour of other videos.
So, Matt, I got a little newsflash for you, man. This is 1982. Most people didn't even have VHS. That ought to tell you that if people were buying the documentary, that means a lot of people were buying their damn VHS players, too. I only knew a couple of people that owned VHS players in 1982. It was not common.
The rich.
Yeah, Stewie probably had one.
I did not.
He was the first kid on the block with a Nintendo. Like, nope. I got Duck Hunt and Mario Brothers.
I didn't get Nintendo until 91.
Yeah, his dad would hold off. He had the money.
It was my mom that we got the Nintendo.
I could see that totally. Your dad would not want it. Your mom would be the one that finally broke him down to get it. It's just the way.
Wasn't me.
That was the dynamic of their family.
I wasn't the gamer.
Stu's mom was the one that would... And Bruce would pretty much give your mom whatever she wanted.
he'd argue with her, but ultimately she'd get what she wanted.
He'd argue and then he'd spoil her. That's how it worked. Yeah, it was funny. I told you, again, sidetrack, but I've never seen a person in my life that was as good at palming money as Stu's mom. She would slip him 20 and it was like a gangster. Like, I'm like, oh my God, she just slipped the 20 into his hand. Like, it was amazing.
Right after my dad said, hell no.
They should have hired her to work for the mob, man. She could have slipped people. Nobody would have seen it coming.
No,
it
she was, may have.
So, married to the mob.
So in 2004, I want to bring this up. Author, music critic Nelson George, he wrote, "It is difficult to hear the songs from Thriller and disengage them from the videos. For most of us, the image defines the song. In fact, it could be argued that Michael is the first artist of the MTV age to have an entire album so intimately connected in the public imagination with its imagery." And I thought a lot about that clip when I read that, and I'm like, he's not wrong. Like, it is hard to, when you hear Billie Jean, what do you think of?
Walking down the sidewalk with the sidewalk light. Lover.
Mm-hmm. Shut up, Stuart. Yep. But you think of the glowing sidewalk and the Jaguar.
Did you say that they weren't going to do the sidewalk?
That was all him. Yeah, that was Michael Jackson that insisted upon that the sidewalk thing, the glowing sidewalk. But you think about all that, right?
Right.
When you think about Beat It, what do you think about?
Pool hall.
Gangs.
The fight scene. And
The dancing fight scene.
I could even take that up.
That's Wesley Snipes. That's in bad.
Yeah. Wesley Snipes is bad.
I get those two videos confused.
It was supposed to be Prince, and he said no.
Red leather jacket.
He said, "I'm not going to let Michael Jackson sing 'Your Butt Is Mine' to me." That's what Prince said, because that's the opening line of Bad. "Your butt is mine." And he's like, "I just couldn't do it." Yeah. So it ended up being Wesley Snipes. But still.
That guy right there next to Kevin.
This guy right here.
Yeah, but it's funny because.
I like that you nailed the point immediately.
I think you,
like,
okay.
Right there.
We said black and white. We said black and white. And the first thing you brought up was Macaulay Culkin. You hear his song, you think of his video. It just it happens.
I think of Egyptians.
And then Thieves in the Temple?
Yeah.
Wait.
That's in black and white, right?
I'm sorry. I meant to say Remember the Time. Thieves in the Temple was Prince. Remember the Time is Michael Jackson.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Remember the Time.
That's right. We fell in love.
What about?
Wait, did you say Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Yeah, that was Magic Johnson in Remember the Time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Tall black basketball player. Shaq, whatever. I didn't say it.
I like that you caught it like way after I said it. And I'm like,
Kevin's over here going, "Wait a minute, didn't I?"
Wait, they're all basketball players.
Wait a minute. I didn't say that. Stu said that. I'm just gonna. I want to talk a little bit about the social impact of Thriller, though. The impact that this album had on a social level. So before Thriller, many felt Michael Jackson, as well as other black artists, struggled to get their airtime on MTV, which is something Stu brought up a few minutes ago. So knowing what they had, CBS record president Walter Yentikoff used Thriller as a bargaining chip against MTV. He actually told MTV, I'm not going to give you any more videos, and I'm going to go public and fucking tell them about the fact that you don't want to play music by black guys on MTV. So MTV's like, all right, we'll play Billie Jean and Beat It. And they did that. And it was such a huge hit for them. It actually led to a partnership, and it helped other black artists gain mainstream recognition. It also caused a shift at MTV from just rock music to R&B and pop. When they showed that what these are, so MTV's argument was always, we weren't being racist, we just played rock music, and there weren't that many black rock musicians.
Music television.
Right, it says music right in their name, right?
Doesn't say rock.
It doesn't say rock music television, but that was their argument.
Nope. Right.
And they were trying to say, they would play a couple of black artists, but they weren't really doing rock music. And that all changed. And then they realized, some of our biggest hits are going to be, literally, some of MTV's biggest hits have been R&B and rap.
So it's kind of like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame having more than just rock and roll.
Also, I think, and one of the things I think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame did, and probably MTV had to acknowledge too, was where does the rock music roots come from? Like we need to acknowledge the people that are impacting, even if it's a white artist. I guarantee a lot of his influences were black music. It's just the way it works. So you got to give credit.
You wouldn't have like a Rolling Stones without Muddy Waters, you know?
Like Mick Mars.
Or Chuck Berry.
Listen to a lot of blues music.
Right. And so, where does all that stuff stem from? And I think that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame had to acknowledge that. I don't understand people who get mad when like we're going to put Run DMC in. Good. Like, why would you not? Like, why would you?
They deserve to be there.
Yeah, they're starting to mix radio stations, though. It's really starting to get weird.
What do you mean?
Like rock stations are starting to have like country music on there and rap.
That's weird.
It is weird. And
the entire format is changing to something entirely different than happening in Kansas City right now.
Maybe radio stations.
Good stations are just going away and becoming a totally different format.
Or do you think it's that radio stations realize they're kind of losing listeners and so they need to integrate?
I'm not trying to go off topic, but like the local here is they're playing Jelly Roll.
We won't talk about
it. And then they're also playing Eminem.
I can't handle the Jelly Roll thing.
Right, but I'm just saying
that. Listen, to all you Jelly Roll fans out there, that's great. I am not amongst you.
Right.
I'm not with you.
But they're also playing like Eminem's Lose Yourself, and I'm like, that.
Like I said, do you guys think
I understand like BC Boys because they do have like a rock band style behind them, but Lose Yourself has nothing like that.
But like I said, do you think it might be that radio stations are losing listeners because of streaming, and so they're starting to integrate multiple types to get more people to listen?
Or they're trying to lose
their That's what I'm thinking.
They're trying to lose their self in the moment? Well, I mean, they own it.
Stop it. I know. I turn the station every time I hear Jelly Roll.
Yeah, it's not. I can't do it. But seriously, though, you own a radio station and you're like, okay, we're losing listeners. Maybe we start integrating a little bit of country and then we pick up a few country listeners that will. I'm not for it. Yeah, but
then you completely
alienate
your original listeners. And like, I'm not coming here to listen to country.
I mean, I agree.
Yeah, that's what the country station is
for. That's why country stations exist.
However, one might argue, I'm likely to get backlash for this, but I don't think I'm wrong. One might argue that not all, but a lot of the people who listen to stations like WEBN here locally are also fans of a lot of country music. Doesn't mean all. You don't.
I can see that.
But I can see people that would listen to both.
Well, there's another guy. There is another artist called Hardy. They play him on the rock station, but his music actually sounds like rock.
Well, I mean, it's always happened. I mean, we've gotten way off the Thriller topic, but it spurs discussion, and we like discussion. There's always been southern, like I like southern rock, but and I don't like country, but the influence of country music on southern rock does not go past me. I get it. I see where those bands are, you know. Just That's another tequila sunrise. I mean, come on. Leonard Skinner, perfect example. Like, we hear it. We know it's there. But I don't like full-blown country, but I do like southern rock. It's so, you know, it happens. It's been like happening forever.
Full-blown country.
Well, I've got full-blown country, guys. Oh, man. It started as a small itch.
I've gone country.
I've gone
country. I'm starting to look like Earl Haggard.
Stu said, I've gone country. I'm gone country. Started as a small itch. I kept scratching.
Oh, look at them boots.
Wait a minute.
I got it started.
My icky, bricky heart.
It started as a small disease. I think they call it the boot scootin' boogie. And then I kept scratching.
One of the side effects is achy, breaky heart palpitation.
I had that disease in high school.
Oh, God. I got swollen Garths, and then I got swollen Garth Brooks, and kept scratching, and went into full blown country. So we need to understand.
I don't have enough Johnny Cash to pay for my medical bills.
God damn it! Well, if you just get a few more Johnny paychecks, you'll be all right.
All right. I'm going to bring it back to Thriller here.
Hey, man, just lose your Charlie pride and just go to the doctor once in a while and get your country music, you know, disease checked out.
Nice.
Are we done? Did we get it out of our system?
Yeah,
are there any more puns?
I know that was my fault.
I see Matt's eyes rolling to see if he can think of any puns. Like, he's like, Hey, let's get something George Strait right now. We are going back to Thriller, whether you guys want to or not.
Speaking of Alan Jackson, Michael Jackson.
No, we weren't. Shut up. Speaking of Alan Jackson, Michael Jackson. There's something you guys, we all need to understand. This is 1982, right? This is 1982. He's a young black musician. His success was rare for anyone. Like, this is rare success for anyone to have.
Yeah.
But especially, it's unheard of in the black community for somebody to be this successful as a musician. We talked about this, which episode? I think maybe, I mean, like one or two episodes ago, we talked about the fact that there just wasn't, everybody liked him. Like, everyone liked Michael Jackson. It's hard to find somebody that doesn't like at least one Michael Jackson song. So he's like crossing barriers. And like I said, it's rare for anybody to be this big, but this is a young black man who is like taking over the music industry, and it's like blowing people's minds, right? He's the biggest phenomenon. He's the hottest single phenomenon since Elvis Presley. So think about that. We have this very white dude singing black music, and now the next biggest thing, the next thing that even comes close to Elvis is Michael Jackson, right? So that's
going to marry his daughter.
Right, which is...
So I got a question for y'all. Would Michael Jackson
death from his father-in-law?
Would Michael Jackson be as big as he is now if he would have stayed with his brothers?
No, no way, no way.
Hell no,
no God no,
no way,
dude, no.
And I think that's why he left. Yeah,
I mean, what if they sang the same music though, like the same videos and all that?
I think there was, although I don't think they will ever. And maybe they have talked about it. I don't know. I think it was becoming for the band a little bit of animosity because Joe saw that Michael was the breakout star and started putting him front and center of everything that the Jackson 5 were doing, and the rest of them were starting to be in the background. They, like I said earlier, they would dance, Michael would be in the forefront. They would be in the background. They would sing a song, Michael would take lead. They would be in the background. So I'm sure it was causing some animosity. And I think at some point, Michael just realized, I don't have to be under Dad's thumb anymore. I can go do my own thing.
Yeah, I can go off the wall.
It was good for Michael.
Which I want to ask you guys a question. Thinking back to Jackson 5, can you name, because I personally can't, can you name any songs by the Jackson 5 where Michael is not like the main singer? Like it's a Jermaine or a Tito?
No, I cannot.
Was it an ABC?
No, that's him. He's saying that he isn't the main singer. Can you name one where one of the others took lead? Yeah. And I cannot. I know there are. I'm sure there are, but no, I cannot.
But they're not well known.
Also, look at this. His brothers tried to go on to do solo careers, a couple of them, but they didn't like
do so hot.
Jermaine did okay for a second.
I mean, Tito.
But I don't think the others did well.
The only one that's had success was Janet.
Oh, yeah.
And,
she
wasn't a member of the Jackson 5, but I'm saying out of the Jackson family, the only one that went on to, none of his brothers who were in the Jackson 5 had the success that he had in
like
any.
Like I said, I think Jermaine had hit or two, but that was it.
I get Jermaine's point.
Latoya had a nice modeling career for a second.
she did.
We've seen that.
It's weird, though. So, to answer your question, no, I absolutely don't think he would have had the same success or anywhere close to it if he would have stayed with them. Yeah. They would have been successful, but I think they would have died out exactly like they did. And I think at some point he still would have broke off. Even if he stayed with them longer, eventually he would have went solo. It's just he was the breakout star.
You think the '80s he would have broke out regardless?
I think eventually. Yeah.
Yep.
I think they might have, if he'd have stayed with them, they might have had a couple more albums, but they would have started losing. Because that kind of
perfect example. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say that kind of 60s, 50s, 60s pop style was going away. And although I love those songs, I love ABC and 123. I love that music. It was going away. But what were you going to say? Perfect example.
A perfect example would be the Victory Tour. I mean, when they were like all getting back together and doing their old songs and new songs, Michael was taking his own plane to some of his locations while the rest of the Jackson Five was in their own plane.
Listen,
so,
I've flown with Tito before, and listen, I don't want to fly with Tito.
I just can't fly coach no more.
I don't want to fly with Tito. Tito has gas.
He farts too much.
Tito's has gas.
He passed gas. Tito!
He makes me even.
Tito! Damn it, boy.
It's the whole Chris Tucker scene.
I'm sorry. I just pictured somebody going, Tito! Damn it! Damn! Damn!
look up the Chris Tucker Tito impersonation. So I went Michael Jackson one.
I went to. I'll have to do that. I went. I went and saw Janet Jackson a few years back.
And, which she's coming back
been,
in town.
It's been 6 years now, but with my ex girlfriend at the time, we were sitting there and we were pretty close to the stage. It was pretty cool, and we're sitting there and she's like. She's like, this is the closest we'll ever be to a Jackson. I was like, I could probably call Tito and hang out with him next week. It's probably fine.
Right.
Hey, Tito, you want to go out? So we could be closer.
Yeah, sure. Let's go get some chicken wings. It'll be great.
But
why is it going to be chicken wings?
We were talking.
Because chicken wings are good.
They're good. Because if somebody says, let's go get dinner, and they suggest Buffalo Wild Wings, Jay, you go, right?
You go. I'd get barbecue wings.
You offered him BW3?
We did, but we're not very close to each other, so it would be a long drive. And if we were going to make that drive, I'd go there, and we'd have some Kansas City barbecue.
Right.
So I was saying, though, I was saying that they were saying this is like unheard of success for a young black man in the black community. Blender actually described him at the time as the 20th century's preeminent pop icon. So that's coming from Blender magazine. And the New York Times gave the opinion that this was a musical phenomenon in the world of pop music. There's Michael Jackson and then there's everybody else. And again, how do we argue with that? During the 80s, especially, and part of the 90s, it was Michael Jackson and everybody else. Like, everyone was striving to be Michael. It's crazy because we've joked around and said we're going to do a Prince versus Michael Jackson episode, which will be really interesting to talk about. But in the end, doesn't matter that one might have a cooler sound than the other. We know which one oversold. We know which one was a bigger success throughout the world.
Yeah.
So.
It was Michael, hands down.
Hands down. So in 1984, Time magazine wrote, Jackson is the biggest thing since the Beatles. He is the hottest single phenomenon since Elvis Presley. He just may be the most popular black singer ever. And I started thinking about that because I was like, man, that seems like a pretty lofty thing to say. And then it hit me. But is it wrong? Because if you think about his success and fame worldwide, is there a bigger black singer than Michael Jackson, known worldwide? More famous than Michael Jackson.
More famous.
I can't think of one.
I mean, I can't think of one. And who would come second would be James Brown.
James Brown, maybe. Maybe would be close. Yeah.
I'm thinking Bruno Mars.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's not
Bruno Mars friend. Is pretty famous. He's
talk about heavily influenced by Michael Jackson.
Oh, no. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, 100%.
No, he's like Michael Jackson reincarnated.
But you're right. He's not black, though.
He's Cuban, isn't
he? He's like, yeah, he's not black. All right, so there was a little cut there, but we had a little tiny discussion while the cut wasn't really. We were talking about it. I think the reason we don't see other musicians, Stu brought up Bruno Mars kind of saying like he has the potential to kind of be as big of a. We don't see too many musicians taking their music, and this is gonna, I don't mean this the
I
way
think over seriously.
Oh, well, that was like his focus. Like, that was it. His music was his focus. And we said Prince, and I said, right, Prince took his music very seriously too. And I said, whether you like her or not, she gets brought up here a lot. Maybe Taylor Swift is taking her music career that serious, but there aren't that many people that are just hyper focused on their music career anymore.
I think Michael took his music too seriously.
Probably. I don't know that I would disagree with that. Sometimes maybe
not that it's a bad thing and all, but
at a certain point he probably wanted to only focus on his music because of everything else that was going on in
like
his
he
life.
Used it to block stuff like, out.
Yeah, like let me just be a musician, leave me the hell, you know, just leave me alone.
And in full honesty, this is where things messed up. I believe I bumped the record button and we stopped recording audio. Now, we do have some audio. I'm going to go ahead and let you listen to the rest of this episode, but I didn't want to just abruptly cut it off. All right, so when last we left you guys, which was probably a few seconds ago because Matt had to go pee.
Probably.
We were discussing, oh, by the way, we've totally changed outfits.
Yeah. I probably put on a couple pounds.
And Stewie's not with us because we murdered him in the background. No, we had a technical difficulty during that, and it cut off the end of the show, so we're going to give that to you right now, so it makes sense. Basically, we were discussing what ethnicity Bruno Mars was. It turns out he is Puerto Rican and Filipino. So there you go.
Or according to Google, mixed.
Yeah, that's what Google said. But he is Filipino and Puerto Rican. And a couple of things that we had been discussing, though, to kind of close this one out, we'd been discussing like some of the impact that Michael Jackson had on and what Thriller, the impact Thriller had. And we were kind of talking about the fact that clothing, I mean, even the style of clothes that were coming out and the whole the jackets and the gloves and he made like wearing high water pants and white socks cool. And I don't know how he pulled that off, but somehow
I can't.
I mean, back in the day, I think you should try nerds, that. You know, wore high waters, but until Michael Jackson came,
it's kind of like Alex P. Keaton made wearing penny loafers cool and Michael Jackson made high waters cool. The last
Carlton
thing
had the
sweater vests,
the sweater over the shoulder,
and doing the Carlton dance, which I'm glad you put that picture up too, Matt, because the last thing I kind of wanted to hit on besides style of clothing is something that most people probably don't even think about.
Jerry curls?
No, yes, he made Jerry curls cool. Just let your soul glow. No.
Follow the drip.
The album cover. This was the first time where the lay down pose thing on the album cover really happened. And God, it got done so much after that.
Oh, yeah.
I think we were talking about the fact that even Lionel Richie has like a lay down cover. Like it became like a thing to do the lay down on the cover of your album. Even Jeff Goldblum has this pose, right? This is pretty much the exact Jeff Goldblum Jurassic Park pose, almost exact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you look hard enough through our Instagram, you'll see one of Kevin doing it as well, including the shirtless, like, you know, chest hair part.
He's what? Got that on there, so. Is this for real?
I don't remember taking
nope,
that
Nope, just
photo.
Trying to see if we can know the Instagram.
Okay. Kevin's like, I don't remember taking that picture.
I'm just going to gaslight the entire internet into thinking that exists. I started working until you called
me. Look, man, I've been friends with you guys a long time, and I believed it. I mean, I'm hoping Kevin takes that photo now.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
What's in my drink, man?
But if you remember, the poster for this is the full like fold out and he has like a little freaking baby tiger on his legs. And there are multiple photos of the tiger in different positions. Like he had to pick which position he thought was best for the tiger to be in. And we talked, God, what was it? A couple weeks back, we did the Michael Jackson conspiracy episode and Matt kept referring to it as giraffe money. We also had tiger, baby tiger money. So, and probably full size tiger.
Call it exotic animal money.
Yes.
Just
Joe exotic animal
money. No. Yeah, Joe exotic animal money. It's kind of true. I mean, he had his own little menagerie of animals. I don't know, man. He was a very influential character, and Thriller is just one of those albums that I think is always going to be held in kind of the highest esteem. So
very much so. You know,
and it has affected how people make music and like I said, the fashion of music, the production of music. So major album. And it was fun to talk about it. And it was fun to go back and listen to it from beginning to end as well.
Oh yeah.
Do you think Quincy Jones could bring back that same magic?
Could he pull that off for somebody else?
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, Quincy is a genius, but who could you pair him up with?
I don't know. I think it's tough these days because Jafar Jackson.
I mean, in reality, like I think that'd be kind of interesting to see, if he could do it again with somebody from the same family.
I think one of the most difficult, well, then I'd go Janet if I was going to try that.
Ooh, yeah.
Because she's had albums that you know, had multiple hits off of them. I think the problem is we don't have albums anymore. I mean, we do, but they don't get released the same way. So right. Can you create a quote-unquote album for someone and have all the tracks be hits or at least, you know, 7 out of 9? I don't know. That's I think we talk a lot about the whole Taylor Swift thing and the comparisons, but to her fans, you might be able to pull something like that off, maybe. I just don't know if there's an artist
out there. To the average listener, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know if there's an artist out there quite as...
like as big as Michael Jackson. Yeah.
So it'd be... Quincy, try it. Do it.
Yeah.
Challenge accepted.
Before we end this, I want to bring up a couple of things. We are doing a screening, another trauma screening. We did one 2 years ago. Out at Humble Monk, when we did hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm, that's the movie, my friends. It was a walloping success. We had a really good time. We had people standing. It was 100+ people out there. Lloyd came out, did a meet and greet, autographs. We had a food truck. It was a good time. Well, we're doing it again. Only this time we're upping it a little bit. It is going to be March the 22nd, Friday, March the 22nd. Tickets are available, but they are starting to sell. So
info right there on the screen if you're watching this at home.
I know some people wait till the last minute, and that's okay. But I can't, like I said last time, there was standing room only. We didn't expect it, but it was awesome. This time, not only are we doing a movie, the movie this time is going to be called Eating Miss Campbell. It is a horror comedy. Looks interesting. It's trauma.
So. It's not a porno.
No. which we're not allowed to screen those in public.
No.
But notice in public. But if you swing by Jay's house on the
right, come on over. We'll watch some porno. I'll show you a different version of eating.
Just make your way past the curtain. I'll watch your step.
So.
Hold on.
So anyway. Okay. You guys make me lose my place. I don't even know what I'm talking about. We're going to be doing it Friday, March 22nd. This time around, though, yes, Lloyd's going to come out again. Basically, the movie's going to start. He'll be out there for the end of the movie. There'll be merchandise for sale. He will be doing autographs and meet and greet for free. You don't pay for that. Tickets are $20. Like I said, that gets you in the movie. They get you the meet and greet, the autograph, everything. But that's not all. We are going to have Ricky Glor out there as well. Ricky is a filmmaker and a comedian. His movie, they just filmed recently throughout the Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky areas. It is called...
I can't remember which direction to point.
It is called Sweet Meats.
His information is going to be right up there.
Yeah, it is called Sweet Meats. It is not out yet. It's coming out later this year, I think in the fall. It's going to be released through Troma, but they filmed it. We've actually had the opportunity to speak with Ricky, and that video is going to be going out soon as well. But Ricky's going to come out and introduce things. Talk a little bit about filmmaking and the way they do it, a little bit about his movie. And he just let us know that he is going to try and premiere, I believe it's happening, but premiere the first trailer for Sweet Meats that night as well. Nice. There'll be food trucks out there. There'll be...
serving sweet meats.
Toxie will be there. The Toxic Avenger will be there. It's going to be a good time. You can head over to, is it just humblemonkbrewing.com?
I believe so.
We'll put it right up there.
Well, I want it for the listeners too, you know.
Yeah.
But if you Google Humble Monk Brewing, you'll find it. And it is available on our website, which is themixtapeshow.com. There will be a link going right to it. You can purchase tickets. If you're going to be in the Cincinnati area, come out, enjoy, have fun with us. It'll be a good time. So there you go. That was long-winded. And I'm going to stop talking now. We're going to end this episode. yeah. And don't forget, we're on YouTube now. So that's why we keep saying, if you're watching this, because you might be watching this, so you can go over there. I feel like Norm MacDonald right now. I'm getting very like getting kind of anxious on my end over here right now. So yeah.
R.I.P.
All right. Thanks, guys. We love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. And until next, we have the opportunity to speak to you fine folks at home. Remember to always stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Even when we can see each other, we can't get
there are times that you feel like your head is a big old bucket filled with fuzzy dreams, 'cause you wish you were a Muppet. But you can't play the music and you can't light the lights, and it's all you can do just to make it through any more of these lonely nights. So you grab your favorite mixtape and you pop it in the slot, and you scream two words along with all the nerds, 'cause right now it's all you've got. Stay, stay awesome. Plant a tree inside your heart and let it blossom. Stay, stay awesome. Got a little light, don't stay curled up like a possum. And if you think you're going crazy, don't go.
Don't go.
Just
stay.
Stay cool.